Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
We continue in the Halloween season here in the month of October 2020. I've decided to release all of Chapter 5 of my 2018 Ghost Stories audiobook to give you something extra to listen to if you like what you hear. The link to purchase the entire audiobook is in the description box. There's 14 full stories. Half of them are original tales, and the rest are urban legends from all around the world. But regardless, this is like 22 minutes of free content, just a way for us to continue to celebrate the season and a nice distraction around the Halloween holiday. I hope you're safe and well, my friends. Enjoy this bonus content from Ghost Stories, the audiobook. And thanks for listening.
Chapter 5. Clown.
What is it about the clown? Why is the clown so often a creature of fright instead of delight? The clown is almost always a bright, buoyant character, a character designed to elicit smiles and laughter, to burst into our most special occasions with a cascade of colorful cheer. But see a clown standing alone on a street corner, or a stuffed clown cloaked in the shadows of a bedroom closet, and we probably won't smile, or laugh, or cheer. So very often, our reaction is to recoil. What causes this disquiet and dread? Why do you and I retreat from the clown, sensing malevolence and even danger, perhaps even conjuring visions of violence against ourselves and those we love? You know, since the days of ancient Egyptian, Greek, and Roman theater, it has been the mischievous fool, the clown, that has grazed against the sensitive nerves of polite society, openly and sometimes savagely mocking powerful people and institutions in ways that were forbidden to the common folk. Make fun of an authoritarian king in the Bronze Age, and you would likely be imprisoned, tortured, or executed outright. But display that same mockery behind the safety of the jester's mask, and both king and court would likely rattle the chamber with the sounds of their laughter. In that sense, I guess clowns can indeed get away with murder. There's a link between clowns and death, and it's a long one. Our modern-day clown figure has roots dating back to the 19th century, including the story of Jean-Gaspard de Barrault and his hugely popular clown character, Pierrot. In 1836, Thibareau was being taunted by a young boy, and he lost his temper, and he beat the child to death with his cane. He was acquitted of the crime, yet the murder branded into public consciousness the image of a killer clown. Just a few decades later, the theme of deadly clowns continued in the popular Italian opera Pagliacci, an opera still performed around the world today. It's the story of a clown who discovers that his wife has been having an affair, and so he murders her. The same period saw the rise of the traveling big-top circus, clowns filling the gaps between the death-defying trapeze and wire walker acts with their own antics and surreal stunts, prompting one man, a French literary critic named Edmond de Goncourt, to write in 1876 that the clown's art is now rather terrifying and full of anxiety and apprehension. Their suicidal feats, their monstrous gesticulations and frenzied mimicry reminding one of the courtyard of a lunatic asylum. The asylum came to vivid life in the 1970s in the United States with real-world serial killer John Wayne Gacy performing at children's birthday parties as Pogo the Clown. Of course, at the time, Pogo's young audiences couldn't have guessed that the red, blue, and white face paint covered the face of a monster, the killer of 33 people, a man who buried many of his victims within the narrow crawl space of his own house. In the public consciousness, again, the clown and the killer were irreversibly linked. In fact, go and image search John Wayne Gacy on Google today, and among the first photos you see will be those of Pogo the Clown. It's interesting. In 2008, the University of Sheffield published the results of a study about those ostensibly cheery clown paintings in hospital pediatric wards, revealing what you and I probably already suspected, that clowns are universally disliked by children. Instead of cheering up these injured kids, the clown artwork actually had the opposite effect, producing stress, agitation, anxiety, fear, prompting many hospitals to remove the clown paintings and return to neutral colors and blank walls. Recent headlines have seen the phenomenon of coulrophobia, the fear of clowns, boiling into a public panic, with evil clown sightings reported across the United States and around the world. Citizens dialing 911 with frantic reports about creepy clowns in public, some standing and staring, others shadowing from a distance, a few even shouting and giving chase. In recent years, reports of rogue clowns prompted some property managers to recommend voluntary curfews for their residents. Clowns have been connected to headlines about the kidnapping of children and terrorist threats against schools. There was a police chief in Chula, Mississippi, who even reported a clown walking the nighttime streets holding a machete. The clown fled and was never captured. The clown is the friendly frown. It scorns the sacred. It doesn't play by the rules. And when a clown shows up, anything could happen. Perhaps it's these elements that make the following story so effectively scary. The account has circulated for years. It first began around 2004, and although this particular story features no ghosts, it has chilled many a spine. The story centers around a teenage girl named Denise. Denise was babysitting for a wealthy couple in Newport Beach, California, Bob and Christine Mitchell, the parents of two young children who had planned a rare date night for each other. Their home was a lovely, spacious house filled with the toys and accoutrements of those who had seen the world and brought its souvenirs home with them. Before the Mitchells left for a nice dinner and a late movie, Bob gave Denise his standard checklist. "We have a strict 9 p.m. bedtime for the kids," he said. "Raid whatever you want out of the refrigerator. Just try not to make a mess. We don't want you wandering or snooping. No feet on the furniture, please. Keep the house locked up, if you would. And if you're going to watch television, use the TV room downstairs and not the one in the living room. We really don't use that room unless we're hosting, okay? Denise nodded, yes. Call us if anything comes up, but I'm not worried about it. They're good kids. They're not going to give you any trouble. Denise thanked them. Everybody double-checked cell numbers, and the parents left for the night. The first hours of the evening passed uneventfully, and at the stroke of 9, Denise dutifully tucked the children into their beds. She then ambled downstairs to discover an almost stressfully cluttered TV room with a couch and a big-screen television dwarfed in paintings, sculptures, boxes, bins, mementos, and tchotchkes of every color and shape. Denise realized immediately that this was where an otherwise uptight family retreated to let their hair down and relax. She flipped on the TV and started to do the same. But Denise couldn't get comfortable. In the front left corner of the room, about a dozen feet away, one of those souvenirs was giving her the creeps. Placed behind a pile of assorted junk was a clown statue. Its porcelain face accented by sharp black circles drawn around the eyes, a candy red paint covering its nose, and a mouth drawn upon the mouth, an outlined blue frown that was at odds with the sculpted face's slightly open-mouthed smile and its set of jagged teeth. The clown statue's hair seemed to explode from a tilted head signaling intrigue, as if it was sizing you up. Its glassy eyes mirrored the light from the television, giving the figure a kind of unnatural life. The sculpture was tall enough to peer over the untidy stacks of stuff, but just barely. A strange trophy. But given the eclectic nature of the other collectibles, not totally out of place. However, Denise had never liked clowns, and she certainly didn't like sharing a dark room with this one. Sometimes when Denise got nervous, she found herself whistling. Not an actual song, just randomly, just the notes as they came out of her mouth. Denise had to chuckle at her own thin skin. And she considered relocating, but she'd been instructed not to wander. So for the duration of the evening, unless she wanted to sit in the kitchen, this was going to be her spot. To ease her disquiet, she turned on the light, the lamp serving as a spotlight to Denise's unwanted companion. "I think not," she sarcastically mumbled to herself as she flipped the switch back off so that only the television strobed the room. She sank back into the cushions. She directed her focus toward the bright 60-inch TV screen, and she tried to relax. But how was she supposed to relax? The statue's outline was shrouded in the corner, but it was there, and it was staring directly toward her. "Gonna be a long night," she said aloud to the statue, and then she braced back into the sofa. 10 restless minutes later, she admitted to herself that while she had been looking toward the television, she had been thinking only about the clown statue. Those dark glass eyes reminded her of those Victorian portraits that leer at you as you walk past them. No matter where she sat or stood, she was being watched. Another 10 minutes passed. Denise suddenly became conscious of her own rapid heartbeat, a growing panic creeping up from her lungs into her throat, the cold sweat on her palms. She'd pulled her legs into a fetal tuck, bawling herself under a thin cotton blanket. She was having an irrational yet very tangible reaction to this close quarters encounter, and finally she could take it no more. Moving sharply, Denise stood up, switched off the television, shut the TV room door behind her, ambled back up to the kitchen table, and had a brief conversation with herself before dialing the father's number into her cell phone. She was genuinely troubled, and, you know, it couldn't hurt to ask.
"Hey, Denise, everything okay?"
Denise was apologetic. Oh, it's nothing serious. The kids are safe in bed. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. I'm so sorry to bother you. But I was hoping you would let me watch television upstairs in the living room. Surprised, the father asked,
Why? What's wrong with the TV room?
Denise responded sheepishly, Well, I can't get comfortable down there. I have a thing about clowns, and your big clown statue is really creeping me out. There was a pause before the father responded,
Clown statue?
Yes, Denise answered. The statue in the corner? There's just something about it that makes me feel like I'm being watched. So, you know, I was hoping you'd let me hang out in the living room instead. Bob repeated himself.
I'm sorry, clown statue?
Denise didn't respond this time. She was struck by the realization that he didn't know what she was talking about. Finally, it was his voice that broke the silence.
What's it look like?
Denise took a moment to process this question. You know, it's in the corner. It's about as tall as me. It looks like one of those fortune teller mannequins, you know, the ones in the box that you put the quarter in. I'm sorry, is none of this ringing a bell? At that instant, she heard a sound from downstairs. The sound of a door being opened. Denise's lungs could not exhale. She tried to say something else, but before she could manage a cry for help, the father's voice shouted through the phone.
Get out of there. Denise, get the kids and get out of the house.
Denise still wasn't processing. What?
Get the children. Get out of the house as fast as you can. I'm calling 911 right now.
With that, Denise heard something on the hardwood below. The sounds of staircase steps and heavy feet upon them. And then she saw on the wall above the lower steps the top of a tall shadow. The moment was shattered by the warning screaming out of the cell phone, the father's voice striking her like a hammer.
Denise, we don't have a clown statue.
How had she gotten to the children's rooms? Denise couldn't remember, but she was there, dragging them out of their beds and pushing them, shocked from sleep, toward the front door. She jammed the door locks open, trying not to look backward toward the staircase. By now, the kids had felt the danger, and their panic shook the house. Finally, the door flung open, and the three of them burst forward, across the quarter-acre lot, across the street, landing at the neighbor's front door with a pounding that could have awoken the dead. Within seconds, familiar faces saw them through the window. Mr. Dorenson and his wife, a lovely retired couple who had lived there for years. Of course, they saw someone in trouble, and their home opened to safety. Right away, the police were called, as Denise and the children glued themselves to the window, watching the open doorway of the Mitchell house, waiting for someone, something, to appear. But even as three police cars arrived, Denise and the kids saw nothing. Four officers approached the open door of the house, weapons drawn. They moved inside in pairs. Before she even realized she had moved outside, Denise was shouting about the clown, to a third set of police officers from the porch. Get back inside, ma'am, came the firm reply. Go back inside the house now, please. As if on cue, the police radio sounded.
Officers responding to home invasion in Broward Park, be advised. Caller states that suspect appeared to be wearing a clown costume.
Realizing that Denise was an eyewitness, the two policemen approached her. The senior officer, his name was Hicks, pulled out his notebook and his questions began. Who are you? Where do you live? What were you doing inside the house? What happened? How long ago did it happen? What did the intruder look like? Etc. He relayed the information to dispatch, and dispatch fed those details to the officers inside the Mitchell house.
543 to 237, be advised. Suspect is an adult male in clown makeup, approximately 5'6", red and white costume. Unknown if the suspect is armed. Suspect may still be inside. Use caution.
Officer Hicks continued to scribble in his notebook as Denise's ears focused on the police radio. There was only silence. She strained to see what was happening, but except for the random beam of a police flashlight in a window across the street, she could see nothing. Denise felt her eyes scanning the rows of houses to the left and to the right. He could be anywhere. It could be anywhere. There had been plenty of time to get out. A clamor of chaotic noise. Then, as if someone flipped an off switch, the shouting stopped, replaced by an ominous hush. The calm after the storm. For about 30 seconds, anyway. The radio again broke the silence.
237 dispatch, 1095.
Denise asked, 1095, what's that? Hicks responded, it means they have someone in custody. He replied on the radio, 543 to 237, bring the suspect to the curb so the victim can identify.
10-4.
Officer Hicks saw the fear on her face. Look, I need you to identify the guy. If you want, you can do the ID from behind the window. Can you do that for me? Denise slowly nodded, moving inside the Dorrington house and behind the glass, drawing down the blinds and peering through the slats in expectation and dread. A moment later, the scene looked like a sick parade. Four officers surrounding a circus clown. The handcuffed man made up in porcelain white, with rounded black eyes, a candy red nose, a painted frown contrasting an open-mouthed smile. He was still smiling. He was looking straight into the window slat across the way, smiling at her. It was Hicks who broke their inauspicious connection. Is that him? That the guy you saw inside the house? Denise responded blankly, yes. Strange, she thought. Even under the bright streetlights and the flashing beams of the police cars, even walking and turning and looking and smiling, he still seemed so unreal. As if there was no flesh or blood underneath the makeup, nothing human within the costume. There was no person, no one. Only the animated shell of the clown, still happily baring its jagged teeth, still boring into her with its glassy black eyes as officers placed it in the back seat of the patrol vehicle. Whoever it was, whatever it was, she'd apparently caught this costumed intruder unaware as she bounded into the television room earlier that night, and with no place to go, the clown, who had apparently been inside that house for who knows how long, had braced himself against the corner, eyes forward, fingers flayed, mouth stretched into that twisted grin, standing there as still as the dead. That's where the four officers had found him. Downstairs, back in the corner, back at his post. Again, the motionless statue, watching, listening, waiting, and never making a single sound. Now, the clown gazed at her through the barely open window of the police cruiser as the car slowly began to pull away. Still smiling, the clown lifted its mouth up to the crack in the window glass. It drew a deep breath, and it whistled a familiar tune. clowns. They're scary. They're awesome. Thank you so much for listening. We'll do one more Halloween-based show talking about fears and phobias, getting into some of the science of fear on our next podcast. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Take care. I'll see you next time.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter for a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming Freethought events and conventions. Log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.